Hello, my name is Kevin Gepke. On behalf of CME Outfitters, I'd like to welcome and thank you for joining us for episode four of this four-part CMEO Cast series, Informed Treatment Decisions for Pain Management, Changing Habits, Improving Outcomes. Today's episode is titled Talking Safety and NSAIDs. Again, I'm Kevin Gepke. I chair the Department of Family Medicine at Indiana University School of Medicine. I'm joined today by Hassan Mir, professor and director of the Orthopedic Residency Program at the University of South Florida and director of trauma research at Florida Orthopedic Institute in Tampa. Hassan, welcome.
Thanks for having me.
So today's learning objective is to apply evidence and guideline recommendations supporting non-opioid pain management. So I think the place that we start here is, do all surgical procedures require opioids? And interestingly, I think if you asked patients and physicians alike, in the mid-90s, the mid-2000s, and probably as recently as 6 to 8 years ago, I think people would have answered that with, yeah, you know what, if I'm going to have some type of procedure, I'm probably going to need a pain medicine, and people use pain medicine as a synonym for opioids. But what has been established is one out of 16 surgical patients becomes a long-term opioid user. And there are a number of studies now showing that patients can have opioid-sparing pain management in that post-op period and do very well. It's been shown that the use of acetaminophen and ibuprofen that many people take intermittently for aches and pains at home can be given as an effective means to avoid opioids after procedures. And people report a high level of satisfaction for that. Part of the challenge that we have run into is the idea that patients are judging physicians or really giving an evaluative feedback on their care based on how well their pain is controlled. Fortunately, those questions are now being taken out of evaluative surveys and the HCAHPS surveys. So people can, I think, really lean on this evidence, especially when it shows that the vast majority in this reported study is 91% of patients agreed that their pain was manageable, even with looking at ways to spare or minimize opioid treatment. So one of the concepts that we think about and talk a lot about now, Hassan, is multimodal analgesia. And I know you've done a lot of work around this area. Do you want to share your thoughts?
Sure. So in some of the work that you cited, there's a lot of orthopedic procedures included in those studies, being hand or foot and ankle procedures and other smaller surgical procedures, where patients really nearly half of those patients who are even prescribed opioids didn't use any of them, and only used acetaminophen and NSAIDs and did very well. And the other side of that coin that you mentioned was the patient satisfaction piece. There are multiple prior publications, and we have some forthcoming ones that show that, yes, patient satisfaction is absolutely linked to how well patients think you controlled their pain. But there is no link whatsoever to the amount of opioid used. And in fact, it's inversely related in some studies to how much opioid was used. So you can manage people's pain well with multimodal analgesia. And I think that there's a couple different things to remember about multimodal analgesia. It's multimodal, not multi-drug. So while we focus on the drugs, and we talk about acetaminophen and NSAIDs and various other medications that we utilize in addition to opioids, we want to remember the other part of that is the other modalities, being ice and elevation and compression as far as physical modalities, and then cognitive modalities that have great evidence, such as aromatherapy or music or guided meditation. And there's various cheap, easy online ways or apps to get access to a lot of these things. So in particular with acetaminophen and NSAIDs, I think that those have been shown to be very effective pain relievers. And even in head-to-head trials with opioids have been shown to be more effective than opioids for many conditions and a few different publications that are out there now. So I think that it's important to remember that these just aren't over-the-counter pain medicines, but that these are actually medications that we can prescribe for our patients so they understand that they're part of their pain relief regimen.
I think that's such an important point that we can actually almost limit the effectiveness of our own treatment plan if we use terms like, well, just take some over-the-counter medicine or just take some Tylenol, when in fact we can really reframe the way we present that to our patients and do so in a manner that they do feel empowered to treat this pain and do so in, as you mentioned, a prescriptive approach as opposed to, you know, go see what you have in your cabinet and go ahead and take that. It's interesting to start looking at the people that are treated with opioids, and you mentioned that there's no correlation with the dose of opioids that they receive. You know, I think that goes a long way towards saying that completely eliminating pain is not the answer to allowing people to feel better when they're in the hospital or after a procedure. I think they want to feel more empowered and they want to have the best information available.
I think patients want to know that you care. They want to know that you care that they hurt and that you're trying your best to address it, but you're trying to do it in the safest way possible for them. And most of the times when you have those discussions with patients, they seem to understand and get it and appreciate it. And that's what we found affects those satisfaction surveys the most, is if your patients think that you care and are addressing their issues.
Yeah. Asking the question. Yeah. As we think about the overall safety of anti-inflammatory medications, you know, certainly they're over the counter, they're readily available. As I mentioned, most people have them in their medicine cabinets, and most people tolerate them without any issues. We do have patients that come in and have some GI upsets, some nausea, some challenges with taking these medicines, especially if they're taking them on a regular basis. But as long as we're thinking through the right patient for the right medication, as we should with all treatment plans, it really is a low risk medication to include. But certainly there are patients that we have to think about from the medical side and ensure that they're not going to be a high risk for a complication.
Yeah, I think that the patients that give me pause and that I lean on my medical colleagues and some of my general surgery trauma colleagues to advise me on are geriatric patients, and especially those who have a history of GI bleeding of any type, those who have significant cardiovascular or renal disease and are on multiple other medications. I think those are patients that whether it's in the chronic setting, for more chronic musculoskeletal pain, and then also especially in the acute setting, that I'll lean on my teammates in the healthcare continuum to help advise me how to manage those patients. There are some surgical colleagues who prefer that their patients, also stop NSAIDs a week before any surgical procedure to minimize the risk of postoperative hematoma or bleeding. I'm not amongst that cohort, and I think that a lot of my colleagues now are leaning away from that because we use them immediately postoperatively. So I'm fine if patients use them preoperatively as well.
Are you more comfortable with a more selective COX-2 inhibitor than a non-selective, or do you have a specific approach that you take with that?
No, I'm fine with any of them, in particular in my practice setting, because I'm a trauma surgeon and I can't wait a week to fix somebody's open fracture that they came in with. But even on the elective cases I do, I'm pretty much fine with whether it's a COX-1 or you know, selective COX-2 inhibitor. I'm fine with whatever they're on, as long as it's giving them relief. I'm not too worried about the post-operative hematoma or hemorrhage. We intraoperatively have other modalities to help control for that.
Fantastic. Yeah. Certainly, one of the things that we think about and talk a lot about as we have patients that are preparing for a surgical procedure or someone who has an acute exacerbation of a chronic problem, we think about GI risk stratification. We want to think about those folks that are going to be at moderate or high risk, and we talk about our patients who are in that over 65-year-old age group and people who are taking essentially prescription doses of anti-inflammatories, NSAIDs, for long periods of time. Sometimes people have had a history of an uncomplicated ulcer, certainly not a large GI bleed associated with that. You know, those are the folks that are really in our moderate risk group. You know, I tend to steer clear of prescribing NSAIDs in my patients who are on warfarin and anticoagulants in general, with the exception of low-dose aspirin. We usually don't combine corticosteroids with NSAIDs, but certainly that's another risk factor. It's that high-risk group that we certainly want to ensure that we think about and minimize that risk. And you know, folks that have had a bleeding ulcer, especially an upper GI bleed, we want to be very careful with those patients and consider if they are going to have anti-inflammatories, NSAIDs utilized in their treatment program, to take a GI protective approach and think about incorporating a proton pump inhibitor, an H2 blocker. Most of those patients aren't going to be exposed to the NSAID, especially if they have multiple risk factors, such as that previous upper GI bleed and renal insufficiency. We really want to ensure that we do no harm in the process of treating them. You mentioned that many of the patients that you care for on the trauma unit or on GI prophylaxis in your outpatient clinic. Do you incorporate some of that in as well?
Yeah, certainly. Patients who have you know, mild or history of GI ulcer or something, or significant heartburn, etc., we'll add a PPI, a proton pump inhibitor, or something. And then the other thing that we've gone to doing more often on either our non-operative patients or those whose, once their incisions have healed, is adding more topical NSAIDs, and those seem to be working pretty effectively for patients. One thing I want to circle back on is one of the risk stratifications is for patients who are on anticoagulation, not necessarily warfarin long term, but those patients who, especially for us, post-operative hip fractures or pelvic fractures or femur fractures, who we send home on Lovenox or on aspirin. And sometimes they'll get the message that we don't want them to take their NSAIDs. And I have to remind them that, yeah, we still want you to take your NSAIDs. It's just for a short amount of time. And if you're having any GI side effects, and we include that in their discharge instructions to let us know immediately, and we'll add a GI protective strategy to help with that.
Yeah, that's such a great clarification to include that short-term anticoagulation. I think one of the biggest pieces is that open line of communication, ensuring that there is messaging going back and forth. As we know, that rapport and that relationship many times is best identified within the primary care office. People many times see their primary care provider for several decades, and many of their family members go to the same physician as well. So anytime there's an opportunity to collaborate on that care, especially in those patients that have multiple chronic diseases, we mentioned earlier, diabetes and certainly heart disease and peripheral vascular disease, we want to think about what is all being included in that treatment program, and mostly we want to make sure that it's on their medication list. Even if they're taking it as an over-the-counter, we want to ensure that we get it into that medication reconciliation process so that we can really weigh those risks and benefits.
Yeah, I think that part of what we try to do anytime, certainly on the elective setting, we always include our primary care colleagues, as far as making sure patients are optimized for surgery. And I think part of that optimization process on the elective side is to discuss the post-operative pain management regimen and the multiple modalities that'll be used. And then on the acute injury side, I think that we want to make sure that we, at least on the orthopedic side, take a good enough history to understand when there are serious comorbidities, that we don't put our patients at risk, and communicate with their primary care docs that that we're doing things as safely as possible.
Absolutely. Well, with that, I think we'll wrap up this episode. Thank you, Hassan. This has been a great discussion. So let's summarize with our SMART goals: specific, measurable, attainable, relevant, and timely. That's what we hope that our listeners can take out of this discussion and apply to their practice. And really using a multimodal analgesic strategy to improve pain management, mitigate risk, really consider those risk factors for adverse events when prescribing NSAIDs, but also keep in mind that there are some strategies to protect from those GI side effects. And ultimately, we can't say this enough: make sure that the entire care team is communicating and working towards the best care of the patient. Thank you for joining us today for episode 4 of our 4-part CMEO cast series. To view additional episodes on pain management, please visit www.cmeoutfitters.com. On the Opioid Education Hub, you'll find a broad range of educational activities and resources for healthcare providers and patients. We hope you'll be able to integrate these pain management strategies into your clinical practice. Thank you.
Thank you very much.